Good evening and welcome to Your Call. Joining me tonight is the Deputy Chairman of the Planning Commission, someone who's just had his 12th five-year plan cleared by the Cabinet, also someone who's seen at the heart of the government's current reforms agenda, Dr. Montek Singh Ahluwalia. Thank you for joining me tonight. It's an interesting time to be heading the Planning Commission and to be in government when the wave or the second wave of big bang reforms has just been announced. What's interesting, however, is that many ask, is this more about window shopping in a sense? Because these reforms, unlike the last ones, had to be passed by Parliament, and the UPA is in a minority as such at the moment.
Well, you know, any legislative action has to be passed by Parliament, and Parliament is supreme in this matter. I think the important signal that's being given is that these bills were now ready to go back to Parliament. In some important areas, like, for example, the FDI and insurance, the Standing Committee of Parliament had recommended against taking it to 49. What the government is doing is that particular recommendation is not being accepted. Now, I think people should understand that, you know, Standing Committee recommendations don't have to be accepted. And if you look at the last 25 Standing Committee reports, some recommendations get accepted, some don't get accepted. So what the government is doing is they're saying, look, we think 49 is important. I think they've made a very good case that there should be no worry on 49 at all. Mm-hmm. And we're going back to Parliament. Now, it depends on whether Parliament passes it or not. I hope they will.
Really key to passing both these reforms or both these liberalisation bills will be the BJP. And as somebody, you worked as an economic advisor in the NDA government, and the BJP and Congress, economy especially, their politics on that is often comparable. At least the left has always charged them with being virtually the same, except for the fact that the different political parties. Are you hopeful that the BJP may be one supporter? They've already said we're going to study the fine print before taking a final call.
Well, I would welcome any party supporting a position that the government has taken. And I think if the BJP rethinks the position they took in the Standing Committee and decides to support these bills, I think it would be a very positive signal. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, everybody understands that in politics, I mean, it's the job of the opposition to oppose. But then there's a certain point in which you kind of move, allow things to move forward. And let's hope that they look at it that way.
So, of course, I mean, there are various studies which say that the experiences there haven't been very good. But
no, by the way, let me. I want to make a point on
one presented by Mr. Sindhia in the House.
There are innumerable, most of these studies are studies of Walmart. Okay. And actually, Walmart is an extraordinary example of a company that began like a small Kirana store, really, and become a retail giant. A lot of the studies criticize Walmart because they, according to the American studies, they don't give labor the full protection that it. These are issues, regulatory issues. I mean, I'm not in favor of anybody coming here and not observing the labor laws, etc. So we should police that. I don't believe there is any serious study that says we should roll back hypermarkets. Mm-hmm. Because it's not just Walmart. I mean, Walmart is one company. So I think these studies are being grossly exaggerated. The other thing you have to remember is that in many societies, I mean, overwhelmingly the evidence is that as change occurs, I mean, modern retail flourishes along with traditional retail. And in very rich countries, you actually get a flip back into the smaller retailer. But what does happen is that the smaller retailer upgrades himself. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if you get a modern retailer who has got an air-conditioned shop, then the smaller retailer also air-conditions their shop. And frankly, I mean, the Delhi example shows that. And the number of malls, etc., have improved, increased, but so have the number of retail shops. So there is simply no credible evidence on this, in my view.
But you're saying don't be Walmart specific, but the fact is Walmart is the main company, the joint venture already in India, and they seem to be the main ones really who are in front of the queue to come in. It's not the other ones
no,
are being much
I don't
more
think
cautious.
So. I think there's Carrefour, there's Walmart, there's Tesco, and once you open up. I should make one other point, by the way. Everybody's thinking of opening up as simply allowing companies that actually will control the thing opening up. The opening up also allows Indian retailers to bring in passive foreign investment. Mm-hmm. So if Pantaloons or Biryani or whatever, Have More or something, all these retail shops that have opened up want to increase their own capital, this policy allows them to bring in private investment. Quite frankly, in 20 years from now, in my view, Indian retail should have a brand name internationally. There's no reason why we cannot be one of the leading retailers, or one or two of us, be one of the leading retailers operating in Asia. I don't believe we can do that if our companies cannot are seen as incapable of competing with anyone. So frankly, I think this is an unreasonable fear. I think it's being whipped up for political purposes. People are being misled, and I hope not too many people will be misled.
When we talk about unreasonable fears, we've seen again the explosion of nationalistic sentiment yesterday. The country's on sale, people saying that why don't we just mortgage the government since we're mortgaging everything else to foreign interests. I have K.T. Singh of the Trinamool to ask about another sensitive issue on pension. Let's just hear what Mr. Singh said.
The question which I want to ask you, sir, is that in my opinion, you are the instrumental person and you are the brain behind proposing 26% equity in the pension funds. My question to you is, sir, that as per the data available with me, in 2008 meltdown, OECD countries lost a whopping $5.4 trillion. Their pension funds lost $5.4 trillion. One more example I will give you is the New York State's fund. It's a pension fund of New York State. Lost $40 billion, the pension fund of New York State. Now, do you think that such risks coming into our country by opening up the pension sector, do you think our country can possibly handle such risks?
Very good question. You know, I think there's some confusion here between who runs a pension fund and how the stock market is regulated. The losses that the pension funds abroad suffered is not because they were run by foreign pension, they were not foreign actually, they're domestic in their own country. It was because the financial crisis reflected a very fundamental fragility which was built into the financial system, which led to a stock market bubble. And that happened because financial liberalization in the West, regulatory liberalization, had not been accompanied by good regulatory activity. So whether you lose money or not depends on whether you invest in stocks and what happens to stocks. That will happen whether you have 26% foreign investment in the pension fund or the pension fund is 100% Indian. I have absolutely no doubt whatsoever that for pension funds to work properly, we need a well-regulated financial system. I'm not suggesting for 1 minute that we are opening up the financial system, although even there, quite frankly, we are much more regulated perhaps than most other countries are.
But when you look at the global model, as you pointed out, and again, when we actually held up our regulatory systems, and at one time your natural opponent, the left, actually made the point that if we weren't in UPA 1, UPA 1 would have opened up much more and we would have been hit much harder by the financial crisis. In the global model, isn't everyone urging much more regulation at a time when India is opening up?
By the way, I think it's a very important question you ask. Countries are sort of ranged along an entire spectrum. And I think the Anglo-Saxon part of the world was in the most liberal, least regulated end. We were much more regulated, and most countries are actually in between. At the extreme end of liberalization, people are now beginning to realize that their regulatory standards were not good enough and they should tighten. So they're moving a little towards the middle. We are still very far from the middle on the other side, and there are many instruments that we do not actually allow easy access to. So I feel that, first of all, we were right to open up gradually. And I think the current view internationally is that developing countries should not be forced to open up. That's very clear. Gradual liberalization is good. My only point is we should keep it gradual. There is no case, in my view, absolutely no case for India to reverse what we have done, because what we have done is actually very small. I would also go further and say that there is a case for us to continue this process. We are very far from anything like a truly open capital account that we have to start worrying about these things.
We'll have more on that, sir, but let's go across now to IIM Calcutta, where again we've got some young people with questions. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm Hari. My question is, in the 11th five-year plan, the country envisaged a growth rate of 9% and achieved 7.9%. In the 12th five-year plan, you have set a target for 8.2%. Do you think the country will be able to achieve it?
Factual position is that the economy has been gradually accelerating. In the 10th plan, we achieved 7.6%. In the 11th plan, we achieved 7.9%. In the 12th plan, we originally thought we would aim at 9%, but recognizing that the global situation is very difficult, we lower the target to 8.2. Mm-hmm. Will we achieve 8.2? I think what the plan brings out very clearly is that this is not an astrological prediction. This is like saying, if you do all the things that are there in the plan, we can achieve 8.2. It's also not rocket science. I mean, you know, when you plot a rocket movement, I mean, the slightest deviation for it is a disaster. Mm-hmm. So whether we do 8.2 or 8 or 8.1, nobody can tell. But I think to say that the Indian economy has been accelerating, in the 10th plan it did 7.6, in the 11th plan it did 7.9, to feel that we can't do 8.2 is just defeatism. It doesn't make any sense.
Thanks so much. Thank you all very much for joining me tonight. Let's just go across to, well, we went from IIM, so let's go to university on the other end of the divide, Jawaharlal Nehru University from Delhi. Go ahead with your questions for Dr. Ahluwalia.
Sir, this is about the investment. I mean, as you recently you've increased FDI to 51%. Now FDI and retail, that is. Now in FDI and insurance has been increased to 49%. You've opened our country up. Don't you think you're tying us into a model of development which is focused on, you know, getting investment from outside? I mean, because of these global production networks and our competition with other developing countries, labor standards in our country are falling very drastically. This increasing contractualization, and this has been very bad for women because, you know, women are mostly informal labor, and because of that, as you've noticed, I mean, this is subverting the struggle for equal pay for equal work also. So what do you have to say about this?
Sir, there was a sample survey done by the ICRIAR in 2008 which clearly states that one Walmart will displace 1300 FDI retail stores in India, which will unemploy some 3900 people. So it's being done in the context of dismal unemployment rates given by your own NSS. It is also being done in the context of farmer suicide and a phenomenon of job disgrowth. Sir, is the Planning Commission planning to exclude millions?
For the first time, we're committed to inclusive growth. And I would recommend to all the Jawaharlal Nehru University students, if they're still watching, they should look at Chapter 1 of the 12th Plan, which has now been cleared and will soon be on the web. We're clearly laying down the multidimensional nature of inclusiveness. I mean, the young lady who talked about women and the role of women, that's also an important thing. But, you know, I think this underlying image here seems to be that running a modern economy, integrating globally, is bad for inclusiveness. I think that's wrong. I mean, I'll say it with all respect. Mm-hmm. I think we should ask ourselves the question, do you believe that deglobalizing India will be good for inclusiveness? I would say absolutely no. Secondly, look at the past record. I mean, I have data, for example, of what happened between the years 2004 and, say, 2011, using the NSS, etc. It's totally clear that between 2004 and 2011, the rate of decline of poverty doubled compared to the previous 10 years. The growth rate went up from, 5.9% to about 8.2%. So both poverty went down, growth went up, real wages in agriculture have grown more than three times faster in the period after 2004.
Also, what, of course, when you talk about, and that has been hailed as a remarkable achievement, is the lifting out of poverty. It's been the fastest growth in that sense in the last 10 years. But given the actual, when you look at it in terms of actual numbers, given the increase in population as well, it still means that the absolute number of poor in India are amongst the highest in the world.
No, of course they are. Look, India is one of the poorest countries in the world. You know, this is like you frequently get these articles which say, we are the second largest number of people with any particular disease. We are also the second largest country in the world in terms of population. As the second largest country in the world in terms of population, we are going to have a large number. The difference is in the previous 10 years, not only has the percentage gone down, the absolute number of poor has gone down, but they're still quite large. In the previous period, the percentage went down very slowly and the absolute number actually increased. So there is change. I think the important point is this. There's still a lot of poverty in India. Anyone who thinks that we've licked the poverty problem is simply wrong. There's a huge job to be done. But I think it's a complete mistake to think that economic policy and the opening up of India has been bad or has produced a worse performance. That is categorically untrue. The performance is actually better than in the prior period.
Let me go across to some of the opponents of that political line. Manishankaraiah, your old friend, has a question to ask you.
Mr. Deputy Chairman, your approach paper to the 12th plan boasts that over the previous 5 years, the annual average growth of GDP in India has been over 8% per annum. And it confesses a few paragraphs later that over the last 11 years, poverty alleviation in our country has been proceeding at the rate of under 0.8% per annum. Do you think allowing this kind of widening disparity is in the larger Indian national interest, or do you think that faster growth, at least for the foreseeable future, will inevitably lead to widening inequalities in our society? And if these widening inequalities are inevitable, do you think our democracy or even the sustainability of our development can be reconciled with an increasingly unjust society?
The argument, because often Bangladesh has been cited as having better social indicators than despite having a lower growth rate, the African miracle, the turnaround countries like Rwanda. In that sense, what you've been saying, sir, on inclusive growth, Manishankaraiah's point is this growth is not inclusive.
Well, it's nice to debate with money. You know, I used to do that in St. Stephen's College almost 50 years ago, and I didn't agree with money then.
He's famously called you Uncle Scrooge.
He has an amazing capacity to build a very well-articulated case, usually on insufficient facts. So the first thing I want to clarify, money's just got the facts wrong. The decline in poverty at 0.7 percentage points per year is what was true between 1993 and 2004. In the period 2004 to 2011, the decline in poverty is 2 percentage points. It's more than double the growth rate in the earlier period. Now, Mani rightly, he focused on the approach to the 12th plan, which was produced about a year and a half or 2 years ago. And at that time, the latest data for the current period were not available. Mm-hmm. So my first request to Mani would be, please read chapter 1 of the 12th plan and update your figures. So the central notion underlying money's argument, and many people have that.
We're nearly at the end of the show, and perhaps the most controversial part of the last year has been the debate over the poverty line. So we actually went to a village in Madhya Pradesh and had somebody look at that experiment.
Montefi, namaskar. I'm Morena se Banji Dindotiya bol raha hu. Abhi aapne jo TV statement diya tha ki 32 rupaye jo aadmi khana kha raha hai wo gareeb nahi hai. Main market gaya tha. और वहां से जो सामग्री मैं लाया हूं वो आपको बताता हूं कि 32 रुपए में क्या आता है 50 ग्राम दाल ये 100 ग्राम चावल और ये 1 रुपए का नमक और 100 ग्राम आटा 9 रुपए का तेल और 1 रुपए की मिर्ची और ये आलू और प्याज 100-100 ग्राम और ये दो टमाटर मैं मार्केट से लेके आया हूं इसको देख के आपको लगता है कि हम रईसी खाना खा रहे हैं अभी आपने पेट्रोल के दाम और डीजल के दाम और सब्सिडी गैस पे से हटा दी इतनी महंगाई हुई आम आदमी जाए तो जाए कहां
नहीं देखिए जो कह रहे हैं ये तो हम मानते हैं कि 32 रुपए आज के दाम पे नहीं थी 32 रुपए कुछ दो साल के पहले की दाम की थी पर पर्सन फैमिली की नहीं थी एक आदमी एक व्यक्ति के लिए लेकिन उसको अगर आप फैमिली में कन्वर्ट कर दें तो ऑन एवरेज जो 32 रुपए है वो कुछ 5,000 रुपए महीने की कंजम्पशन हो जाती है अब कई लोग कहते हैं कि भाई 5,000 रुपए बहुत कम है मैं मानता हूं कि इसीलिए हमने एक नई कमेटी एस्टैब्लिश करी है लेकिन एक चीज याद रखनी चाहिए यूपीए गवर्नमेंट जब आई थी हमें कहा गया था कि जो पहली पॉवर्टी लाइन है वो बहुत लो है इसलिए हमने तेंदुलकर कमेटी एस्टैब्लिश की तेंदुलकर कमेटी ने वो पॉवर्टी लाइन को बढ़ा दिया तो हमने जो किया है हमने उसको बढ़ाने की कोशिश की अब लोग कह रहे हैं कि ये काफी नहीं है और होनी चाहिए तो हमने रंगाराजन कमेटी एस्टैब्लिश की ये इंपॉर्टेंट बात नहीं है हम ये नहीं कह रहे हैं कि खाली 32 रुपए होनी चाहिए अगर हम कहें कि सब्सिडी 5,000 काफी नहीं है 6,000 7,000 पर मंथ को सब्सिडी मिलनी चाहिए सरकार निर्णय ले सकती है.
वॉज दैट अ टैक्टिकल मिस्टेक, द आर्ग्यूमेंट अगेन दैट द थिंकिंग ऑफ द पीपल विद इन द प्लानिंग कमीशन is anti-poor. When you look at LPG cylinders and you say the non-poor are not the people who use LPG cylinders, you actually leave out a huge tract of Indians who fall in this gap of between 32 rupees or 33 rupees, or even if they earn 10,000 rupees a month, the 12,000 rupees a month would be seen as non-poor.
No, but
they can't afford the burden of, say, this LPG cylinder being 127 rupees up.
You see, I think the poor, non-poor is not a good distinction, because I think we have a concept of poor. Then you have a concept of vulnerable. I mean, let's say according to the, I don't know what the Rangarajan poverty line will do, but suppose the Rangarajan poverty line raises the poverty level to say 40% or so. I would readily agree that beyond that 40%, there may be 10% or maybe even 15% who are kind of vulnerable. Beyond the vulnerable, you have the Aam Aadmi. Now, the Aam Aadmi is not poor, also not vulnerable, but he always has a tight budget to manage. And then you've got the top, different people will say either the top 20% or the top 15%. Frankly, we can't stop worrying about even them, because after all, they worry about the prices of vegetables, the prices of milk, the prices of meat. Bottom line is, we ought to bring prices under control. People will be able to afford prices if their incomes rise and if they have good jobs. You don't solve the problem by trying to introduce price control.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whenever prices go up, part of the problem with the cylinder business is that we've kept it low for such a long time that people have got used to buying cylinders at a much cheaper rate. They're still getting them at a very cheap rate for the first six cylinders. They're having to pay a higher price for the anything above that. Many of those people can afford it. For some, it's squeezing the budget. I mean, obviously, it squeezes the budget at the margin. Had we been increasing these prices by 2 rupees, 3 rupees every year, we wouldn't have had this problem. So I think you've got to allow that transition to take place.
P. Sainath at The Hindu has written very strongly against what he calls austerity of the affluent and targeted you, the government, the foreign trips. We've seen, in fact, that foreign trips of ministers have doubled in the last from the last year. And he targeted you, saying that your foreign trips added up to an expenditure of 2.2 lakhs a day. How can you then determine poverty lines and say that 32 rupees is an acceptable or is the poverty line of India?
You know, I think what P. Sainath should have said is that I travel when the government asks me to travel. I don't particularly want to travel. Since I hold an official position and represent the government on many international agencies, I don't think it's right for me to say I don't want to travel because P. Sainath won't like it. I travel by the class the government gets all ministers to travel. I stay in hotels which are chosen by the government. And the truth of the matter is, if you're going to send teams of people out to New York, it is going to cost a lot. We don't decide what that is. And personally, I think that you cannot have an India which is having a bigger position globally, etc. People want more Indian representation in all kinds of meetings. Then you raise these issues. And this travel business has not just limited to me, ministers, everybody. I think the country's just got to grow up. Personally, I have no view
on that bloating. You don't think the government or the planning commission should relook at that kind of bloating?
No, by the way, that is, in my view, somewhat trivial. It may be symbolically important. But the absolute amount of money spent on government travel is very small. It is not planned expenditures. That's just the job of the finance ministry to do. But I would assure you that I've had some people saying, why do you want to live? Why do they put you up in this hotel? If you have an international meeting in a particular hotel, these hotels charge the earth precisely because there's an international meeting. Do you really think it's practical to be in an international meeting and choose some hotel somewhere else in New York? I think it's better not to go to the meeting. That's actually, in my view, a much more viable thing. One thing, it's very easy. Look, we're a poor country, and the expenditure on foreign travel would not just shock poor people, it'll shock ordinary people. I think it's cheap journalism to throw those kinds of numbers around. Particularly when he's not pointing out that every minister of the government of India, when they travel, that's what it costs. I do nothing which is not part of the rules. And most of this expenditure is not discretionary. I mean, it's not as if I'm giving parties abroad or any of this kind of stuff. So frankly, I think we need to grow up. I mean, do you want Indian representation abroad or not? I'm perfectly happy not to travel, by the way.
Dr. Mantek Singh Ahluwalia, final question. You're known, of course, as being a friend of the Prime Minister as well. Are you happy to see the new avatar of Dr. Manmohan Singh, considering the press and the media criticism he faced for the last 1 year, being termed as an underachiever, various accusations against him? Are you happy to see the new avatar of Dr. Manmohan Singh?
Well, I don't know if it's a new avatar, but I'm certainly happy to see the actions taken. I knew that many of these were in the pipeline, and many of them were being held back because the government wanted to consult. So unlike the press, I was not under the impression that we're doing nothing. I'm glad that we've taken action. I think actually it's the old avatar, it's not the new avatar. And I think government as a whole is conveying a very clear signal. We know the economy has slowed down. We know the economy can do better. We're determined to make it do better. And what you're seeing in the last 3-4 weeks are just a whole series of steps. I hope there'll be more in the coming weeks.
Dr. Mantek Singh Ahluwalia, thank you very much for joining me tonight. Thank you.
Thank you.